All right, everybody. So y'all know where I like to start the class, right here on our schedule. Are you seeing our schedule page? Thumbs up, please, if you see the signal page, schedule page. Man, I got a lot of, it's great. Okay, so we are here on the 16th of March and ready to talk to you about signals, the last really important part of chapter 8. And goes a big part of Shell Lab. As you know, on Friday we did our Shell Lab demo and we got just about everybody to where they need to be. We have a small number of people to get caught up this week. Some people were sick and stuff like that. Speaking of which, I hope everyone is well today and we are doing class this way as a safety measure, and we want everyone to stay well in these times. So please do keep in touch. And by the way, staff, come wave at the crowd just to let us know. I mean, oh, your camera's on. Well, but she'll come on. But you know, we don't have to. We're not hugging or whatever. But like, you know, we are here. We're not all alone, and we're still here to help. You know, all of us. We're going to be doing help hours via Zoom, a lot like this. You are all invited to raise hand and ask questions during lecture on Zoom. We're all kind of getting used to it. The TAs are going to help get my attention when someone asks a question. You can also ask things on the text chat. But if you want to have the full class experience, you know, you can share your camera and mic, and we can see you and talk to you that way. So that'll be great. So like I said, I hope we're doing the right thing by keeping everyone from crowded rooms, which is the right idea for virus reasons. But we are also giving you the full class experience. UNO has not canceled any classes. While it's a little bit of a challenge to do this on short notice, I think we are not shortchanging you, the student, and can give you as close to the full experience as possible. And I think that's going to work fine. But please let us know what little technical difficulties we have and what we can fix. And thanks, staff. We'll be seeing you at help hours tomorrow. And they're going to help me out and let me know when things aren't going right because I'm trying to put my full attention on the course matter. So any questions about any of that, folks? All right. Let me see. Let me practice calling on someone. Stand by. Okay. So participants. I'm still figuring out how to do this. Okay, so now it's being slow. Well, I thought I. Yeah, so Sean, can you ask a question now?
I want to like check to see if my mic was working. You can hear me, right?
Yes, I hear you. Thank you. That's a good check.
Okay. Also, did you like see the little scribble that was on the board earlier? I kind of was messing around and I just had access to like some drawing tools on the slides for some reason.
I did not see that. So let me take a look here. How do I see that? I don't know. Maybe you guys can help me figure out what he's talking about. Oh, okay. I guess it was up there. Okay. Someone saw it, but I didn't notice because I was doing other stuff. All right. So I am going to put our slides up on the board as usual, but I'm also, you know, this is like not the ideal way for you to see these. So we're going to encourage you to get the digital slides. Of course, you already know how to do this on, you know, our course schedule page. And Serge, can you share the slides also? And we'll try and keep this in sync. Yeah, so these are the slides, and you still see probably see me in the corner, right? So here we are. We'll adjust this if this doesn't work well. As you've heard a million times, so I'll go through this quickly. We've done our first Shell Lab demo. You've showed a working eval, so your Your shell has now run ps. It's run ls-l with an argument. It's run my spin for 4 seconds in the foreground. So this is a good starting point. You're calling fork. You're calling exec ve with the proper parameters so that it gets arguments. You're running foreground job like my spin. So these were our notes about Friday. So okay, so let's get back to the lecture material. I think also on Friday we gave you a big overview of the built-in commands, jobs, bg, fg, and quit. So those are good next steps for you on Shell Lab. Also, if you check the schedule, we've put two short pieces of slides up for the Friday part of the schedule, just recapping the next steps that we went over. So, and we talked a little bit about foreground jobs and background jobs, having the ampersand at the end, that sort of thing. So, let's bring this back to processes, my favorite subject, and hopefully yours also. So, in a Unix operating system such as Linux, and in operating systems in general, we have processes that have process IDs and live in their own happy little bubble. But also, as we've learned, processes are created with fork, and that the new process is called a child process, and every process has a parent that created it, all starting with process ID number one, which is traditionally called init, or there are a few other similar ones, such as systemd, but a program specifically designed to be the first one to run to start everything else to get the system going. And everything else that the system does, almost everything else, is run by some process. So the thing that logs you in, it says login shell here. This is bash in your case, so when you connect with SSH, but also when you log in to the graphical console in the classroom or on Systems Lab web, you are getting a process on the servers handling that. Also things such as servers, this thing httpd is like a web server, so the thing that provides you with the schedule page when you load it up is also a process. And in fact, it uses fork to create lots of processes so it can serve lots of people at the same time. So, and then these processes create their own children and so on. There is a Linux command called pstree that will show you all the processes as a tree. If you run this on Systems Lab, it'll be pretty long, but potentially interesting. All right, are we still good on audio, video, and all that? Great. Okay, so let's talk about the shell once again. So this is a basic part of making a system useful. If we have an operating system that is all based on processes, we need a way to start processes. So you are making the tiny shell. Of course, it is 2020 now. These code examples, which I think I've showed you briefly before, these are sort of shorter versions of what you'll also see in tsh.c. So a main function with while one, this is the loop that will continue taking commands from you indefinitely. You know, one is the condition that's always true. Of course, you know, it will eventually exit by some method such as the quit command, or something like that. So it's not actually infinite in the like out of control sense. So this loop prints a prompt, and then whatever input it gets, it sends to this thing called eval, which is what you've been working on. So you know all about that. Going forward, we have, you're probably familiar with this because you probably referenced this when you started TSH. So just again, recapping here, I've told this to a few of you all, but I don't know if I told you in class. This example is a starting point. It's, definitely, first of all, it just won't work straight up copied into TSH for reasons that you know. But it's also flawed in other ways that we'll talk about. Minor ways, such as, first of all, this thing buff is actually unnecessary. It makes a copy of command line, but actually, we don't need a copy of command line. So you could call parse line with command line and argv. You can also use this thing buff. I mean, having an extra copy of the command line is not a huge waste. I don't know why that's there though. This is incidentally, you know, from the textbook, there's a similar bit of code in the book. So we talked about built-in command on Friday. So the thing to keep in mind about this line that says if bang built-in command parentheses argv. So let's kind of pick that line apart here. So argv is the array of arguments broken into words, the thing that parseLine generated for us. So built-in command is operating on that to determine if the input constitutes a built-in command, such as quit, jobs, fg, and bg. So it determines that, and then built-in command returns 0 or 1, depending on if the input was a built-in command. So it would return 1 to represent, yes, the command was built-in, and 0 to say, no, it was not. So if bang built-in command is saying, well, you know, if, you know, you may remember from Data Lab, bang is sort of, you could also call that the is0 function. So so we're checking to see if built-in command was 0. And if so, do all the fork stuff, because if built-in command is 0, that means we're not talking about a built-in command. Everything that's not a built-in command requires a new process to go run a whole new program. But the thing I want to point out about this, though, is that it's not just answering that yes or no question, because built-in command also has side effects. Built-in command, if it is a built-in command, it actually goes in and performs that action, such as quit, jobs, bg, and fg. So there's kind of a lot going on in this one line. It is checking for built-in commands, and if so, performing that action. And if it's a built-in command, it returns 1, basically meaning that built-in thing has been done, like jobs has been printed, or fg and bg have done their thing. And then it doesn't enter this if block and just returns back to main for the next command, the next command prompt. So so anyway, this is kind of a takes a little bit getting used to read these lines of code where it's like built-in command is going and doing something, but also returning something. So there's like side effects. There's also the return value. ParseLine is similar in that it like returns whether there's a BG, a background command or not. But it also is generating this argv thing. So this is just sort of the nature of some of these C functions that are both returning a value and having side effects.
I have a quick question.
Yes, please, go ahead.
So are these functions being called in the condition? So like if built-in command is built-in command technically being called in that if statement?
Yes, it is. Yeah, good okay. Question. Yes, exactly. So, you know, of course we could verify this, we could disassemble it and we'd see a call instruction in there. But you're right. It is called, and that's exactly how it, you know, it goes and does stuff. And, you know, okay, we can also, you know, you could put a printf statement at the beginning of built-in command and print, you know, entering built-in command. And then when this line is reached in eval, it would then go to built-in command and you would see that print statement. And, I'm not saying this to be silly. This is actually a useful technique when you are in the midst of working on this and you want to know, like, wait, is the code even, you know, my built-in command function isn't working and I don't get it. First thing to check, like, is it even running? Like, you think it's being called, but maybe, you know, in complicated programs, there's like all these functions and it's like layer after layer. And a lot of times what you have to do is just sort of check, wait, is instruction pointer even getting here? If I'm trying to figure out if it's working or not, first thing, does it even get here? So putting a print statement being like code got here is a useful technique. Maybe you've done this in your Java programs. Anyway, yes. So built-in command gets called, it goes and does stuff. There's like, you know, in the midst of that if line, it's maybe not totally obvious that it's going and doing something. That's actually why the first time that we had you call fork, gosh, so way back 2 weeks ago, was that about then? You may recall. And guys, if I write on the board, is this going to be seen? Is this, am I up here? Or can I be, David, can you figure out a way to get me up here?
I'll move the camera.
Yeah. And so when you first called fork, we actually had you put it like, you know, what do we call it, fork returns or something like that. You know, I think we had you do something like this. Y'all see this? So no, not that well. Okay.
Zoom in on it.
You can zoom in on it. I mean, you could also, one of you guys could type it into the chat for me, I guess. But we had you call fork and then store its return value in an int, and then later on check, you know, something like this. Did fork return zero or not? So this is like trying to make things as clear as possible. But I mean, the typical way to do this, and what's happening here, and instantly, so we could say we could store built-in commands return value in a variable, and then immediately check it in the if statement. But what's happening here, which is shorter and more common, is just saying, you know what, if we just said if, you know, if fork equals zero, so this combines these two lines, calls this first, you know, which does what fork does, creates a new process, and then checks the value afterwards that it returned. So the reason we did it the top way the first time was just to make it extra clear to you that first it's called and then its return value is checked, and both of these things are happening. But it's still, this is exactly the same in one line. The only difference being that this is actually stored. You could check this again later, which incidentally, we encourage you to do an eval, because we want you to check for fork returning less than zero and an error, and also zero for, I would look around now and ask you to tell me like what the two return values of fork are, but you all have already done this. So zero for the child process and the child's PID, some positive value for the parent process. So we have raised hand from Donald, is that right? Can you speak to us? Unmute yourself, perhaps.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just seeing if, because I'm having trouble, never mind, he's doing it now. I was having trouble seeing what was on the board. I was seeing if maybe you could type it in.
Great. Okay, great. You got it for me? Thanks, awesome. Okay, team effort. Thanks, team. yeah, okay, so I don't know if lighting would help this or what, but I wasn't planning to write a ton on the board today, so that's okay. Okay, what else do you want to ask about this eval thing? Manuel got me talking about reading that, which is good. That's why I brought it up. So again, you know, same issue here. Fork is being called, but then its return value is being checked all in one line here that says if PID equals fork. And I think we've also mentioned that the capital F fork is something that the book uses to like implicitly check that error value that, you know, you don't have capital F fork in tsh.c, you know, unless you write it, which you're allowed to do. And of course, we've got exec for having the child process execute a new program. And in the case where exec ve fails, then this command not found will be printed, which you all found out you need to do exactly as tshref does in order to satisfy the outer lab demo checker. And same thing in the rest of the shell lab, you'll have to make sure your error messages match tshref. All right, y'all ready to go forward? Okay, let's see. Okay, so background jobs. This is where it gets interesting. So right now, the way that this works, and if your code is similar, you can try this. For a not background job, if bang bg, which really is another way of saying if it's foreground job, for not background jobs, we have int status. Well, why do we have that? Well, we'll talk, you know, wait pid writes stuff into it. We'll talk more about that soon. But then it calls this thing wait PID. And again, you know, here's another, it's another if statement with a call in it. So let's break that apart again. So it's calling wait PID, which, you know, in the case of my spin 4 is going to, for 4 seconds, not do anything while the child process is spinning, as it, my spin is called. And then when that 4 seconds is up, wait PID gets, you know, runs, finishes, puts a status thing in status. And then this if statement can check, you know, when wait pit is done waiting, it can have its return value checked. And if it's less than zero, this error message is printed because system calls return negative to denote error. And then return, you know, it'll make it down to return because it'll skip this else and go back to main, print a new prompt. So this is the way that your shell doesn't print a new prompt until the 4 seconds are up. And also, waitPID doesn't just wait, though. You may recall, waitPID reaps. So waitPID deals with that child process that got created with fork, is going to, when my spin is done, it's going to sit there as a zombie, holding its return value, waiting to be checked by its parent, waiting to be reaped so that it can go away, let the operating system reuse that PID, all that stuff, free up those resources. So waitPID reaps that child process and allows the shell to print a new prompt. This is normal behavior for foreground job, works fine. But we're not done. Ready to find out where it doesn't work? So where it doesn't work is right. Where it doesn't work properly here is background jobs. So in this example of eval, a background job, something that has an ampersand at the end of it, you know, the intention is that my spin job might take 4 seconds or 40 seconds or some unknown amount of time. But we want a new prompt. We want to keep doing stuff. You know, I actually do this all the time where I have a long running job. Sometimes it's my PDF viewer when I'm calling up the slides, and that's just going to sit and run, but I want my command prompt back so I can do other stuff. So ampersand at the end says it's a background job. So if BG is one, we're going to skip this case for foreground jobs. Incidentally, a place where you need to have comments to denote what this really means, this is for foreground jobs. For background jobs, what this does is simply print a PID in a command line. And what you're going to find is that when you get to the tests for TSH, you know, printing a PID, if you look at what TSH ref does, it actually, you know, there's some parentheses and a job ID. There's more to it than just this. So you'll have to change this print statement. But in any case, a background job, it prints something to let you know the job has started with a PID and a job ID, but then it returns immediately. There's no wait here. And it returns immediately to main to get a new prompt, can take new commands, and that's how your shell can run, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to some large number of different processes. This is what bash does also. So fine, this prints and gives you a new prompt. That's what you want, but it's not done yet. So moving ahead, waits for and reads foreground jobs. So what about background jobs? So the background job goes and runs, we get a new prompt and can kind of move on with our shell, except when that background job finishes, those processes become zombies, and we know that. But waitPID will never be called that process because the shell will keep running and never go looking to check for what happened to that previous child process. And that could end up leaking memory, which is a thing that we always want to avoid, but also it's just going to become a mess. The child's, the parent process, the shell, is not going to be able to keep track of its child processes, which is one of the things you have to do in shell lab. So I think I accidentally muted myself. Am I back? Yeah. Okay. So what do we do? Solution, exceptional control flow. We have a system for this exact situation, and it's called signals. So, and that's what we're here to talk about and what you will spend a large part of shell lab working on. So this is the method that our operating system kernel gives us to notify a process of things happening outside of its little bubble, the little ideal world that the process lives in where it doesn't know about other processes. Well, we actually need this process to find out about things from the outside world, and we have this method called a signal. So when signals are given to a process by the operating system kernel, well, things will happen, and this process can respond appropriately, and we'll talk about what your shell needs to do to handle this. But this means that that background process can take some arbitrary amount of time, but when it's finished, parent process will be notified, hey, your child process is done. You need to go deal with it. And we'll do that via a thing called a handler. So that's basically what a signal is. And that's why, as a author of a show, you need to utilize this. You really can't do what you need to do properly without this. So that's what we'll be talking about, signals. So are you ready to go further into signals? That's where I would like look around and you would like nod, or maybe someone does the thumbs up thing on the, I don't know. Y'all will tell me if someone, oh, cool. All right, thank you, Max. Okay, so signal, our definition, a small message notifying a process that an event of some type has occurred in the system. So there's actually many different types of signals. The thing I started on was notifying a parent process about its child. That's just one of many ways signals can help us. So that's called SIG child. A child has stopped or terminated. But there are many other signals. And these are similar to the exceptions and interrupts, the other things that operating systems can do to switch between processes. So our operating system kernel will generate these signals and interrupt a process from its normal progress, which, you know, as you're familiar with, is just advancing through its instructions, moving the instruction pointer along, taking jumps and all that. But the kernel can cause this process to go do other stuff based on a signal. And this can also be a process can intentionally signal another process, or the kernel itself can notify a process. So signals have signal ID numbers to denote what type of signal they are. And that's it. Signals are quite simple. They have a signal ID and they're either, you know, they're either there or they're not. A signal, it's sort of like an on-off thing. So it's a small, succinct message saying, okay, signal number two, well, of course, you don't need to memorize all these numbers. We have a list of them, but there are a small number you'll worry about in Shell Lab. Signal number two, sig int. That's the notation for these names, sig for signal, and then int, int is short for interrupt. And that is what happens when you type control C to a program on a Unix system, which is not for copy, which is maybe what you're used to in like Microsoft Word or something like that. Control C denotes sig int, and is used, you know, and you may have even, maybe we even tried this during Bomb Lab, SIGINT, or, you know, a MySpin process that I accidentally typed 600 seconds into and I didn't want to wait for. Control C says, we're interrupting this process. So that is one of the signals you will support in Shell Lab. So your shell needs to deal with a situation where someone types Control C, we need to make sure the right process gets terminated and the other ones are still okay. There's another ID signal 9 called sig kill, and this is also similar to interrupt, although this is kind of a more forceful version. That so sig int is asking a process, please stop what you're doing, and sig kill is the like you are going to stop. So sig kill cannot be ignored or handled in any other way. You know, this may be familiar to you if you have on your, you know, if you use a MacBook or something like that, you know, there is a force quit option there, which is a similar idea that if it's not quitting the normal way, you can force it. And there's a, you know, Windows has a sort of in process method similar to that. So so sig kill is the forceful version of sig int. There is a signal 11, sig seg v, segmentation violation. If you are writing C programs with pointers, you are likely to have one of these, and it is you know, an unfortunate thing that happens to programmers and is a generally a flaw in your program that you need to fix. Hopefully you don't have tons of these, but as you go further in Shell Lab and you're dealing with text strings and you make mistakes, this may happen. And well, we'll fix them. We actually have a little section in the Shell Lab paper write-up on what do you do when your shell has a segmentation fault, which is we call that a crash. You definitely have to fix that. And GDB is actually a great tool for telling us exactly why a program's done this. GDB can tell you what line of code in TSH your program was at when it crashed, and what, you know, you can see what the values of registers and values of variables are. So this is like a tool for programmers to fix problems in their program. SigAlarm has to do with setting timers so that a program can, you know, after a certain period of time, do something different. You're not really dealing with that much in Shell Lab. So SigInt and SigChild are both things that you have to deal with in Shell Lab. And then there is a third. There are three signal handlers you have to write. One for SigInt, Control C, terminating. SigChild for dealing with child processes. This is probably the most complicated part of Shell Lab. And finally, what's not on here is SigTstop, which is Control Z, stopping a process sort of temporarily with SigTstop, T for terminal stop. So those are some of the signals. There are several more, but there are three that you'll need to focus on. Are there questions or comments from the audience? What was the second one? Like on this list, or second one in which list? There are three they have to worry about in Shell Lab. So of course, those are all, you know, there are empty signal handlers. You know, if you look in TSH.c, you're going to see three, but I can do them from memory. But look in TSH.c, you will see a SigInt handler. You know, it's empty right now. You need to write that. SigTstop handler. I'm doing it in a different order than I just did. The second one is SigChild handler, but start over. I'm doing it in my order. The easiest one, SigInt for interrupt, Control C. Second easiest one, SigTstop, Control Z. You know, have a process stop, and but can it get resumed again later? SigInt is like done. SigTstop is stop, but can get restarted. And then finally, SigChild is notifying a parent process that its child has changed. So those are the three for Shell Lab. And could you repeat SigTstop? So yeah, once again, that is the Control Z. We'll demonstrate that some more. I think I actually showed it briefly on Friday when I had a background job, or I had a foreground job and I wanted to make it into a background job. I used Control Z. Again, this is a thing that Bash supports that is like kind of a somewhat normal thing to do on a Unix shell. All right, so with signals, the terminology we use here, signal is sent to a process by the kernel, and this process can then do stuff. It will interrupt the process and can go execute other parts of the code appropriately. So the kernel can decide to do this for some sort of system reason. There's some errors that cause this, segmentation fault being the dreaded error. Or like the kernel knows when a child process has stopped or terminated. But the other reason a process could get a signal is because some other process has decided to send a signal to it using its process ID. So the system call is called kill. This is possibly a little confusing because one of the reasons why you might send a signal to a process is to tell it to stop or kill it. But that's not the only reason. I think it was probably named that early on. And then when it got expanded to do things other than killing, well, they still kept the name kill. So then it's sort of strange. But the thing that sends signals is called kill, even when it's actually not doing anything to stop a process. So that's kill system call. There's actually a command called kill on the command line that also does this. But there's like a system call, a function with parentheses and all that, that you will use in Shell Lab. So we say a process receives a signal when it's acting on that. So a process can ignore a signal. This is something that, you know, the programmer can set. The process can terminate when it gets a signal, which is what happens by default for certain things like SigInt. And core dump is this thing where it writes out the memory for debugging later in something like GDB. But the other thing that can happen is catching the signal with something called a signal handler. And that is where it gets interesting for you in Shell Lab. So you will be writing little bits of code called signal handlers. And this is similar to this idea of an exception in the system. But this little diagram here I think is useful because, again, imagine the like downward arrows being the disassembly of a program where we're saying, here's an instruction followed by another instruction, you could be taking them one at a time in GDB, or, when you're not debugging, it's just flying through all of them. But usually the instructions just happen in order, maybe there's a jump or something in there, but they're just going forward through the program. But when a signal is received, in between two instructions, the instruction pointer will jump over to some other bit of the program defined as the signal handler. So at the beginning of the program, it sets when this signal comes in, this is where we expect to jump to. So signal handler has some code of its own, again, that you're going to be writing, but that code is going to execute, however many instructions it is. Processor go through there and do all those things. And when it's finished, it will return to whatever instruction was right after the one that ran previously. So all the instructions in the original code get executed in order, but it takes a little detour over to do the signal handler stuff. So this is what will happen in your shell. Also, it'll be going through, going through its loop of like printing prompts and eval, calling eval. But whenever a signal comes in, it's going to go and run that signal handler and come back. So you have these three signal handlers that you're writing, but they'll actually never be called explicitly. There's nowhere, you'll have a thing called SIGINT handler and you're going to write this code for it. But there's nowhere in TSH where you're like calling, you never write SIGINT handler parentheses something something. But if you put, and if you did, like I said before, if you put a print statement in there to see like, is this actually running? You would see it, even though you never see a call anywhere there. What you do see is, and we've already done this for you, in main, there's a place where we say the signal handler is like registered or installed. We've told the operating system when the signal comes, this is what we want to call. And just a couple more terms. We say the signal is pending when the operating system has, set it as on. And just one note is that there's not a queue of signals, and that a signal is either on or off, such that there can only be one SIGINT. You can't have like three of them. And so if a duplicate one comes in, nothing really changes. It's still in the on state. And then processes can block signals temporarily to just sort of say, hold on a second, I'm in the middle of something important. Because backing up real quick, we could imagine a situation where we have some set of instructions that it's like really important that they go in a certain order and not be interrupted. And we're going to talk about that more shortly when we talk about race conditions. But there are situations where we know we can't interrupt this right now to go run a signal handler. So the program can temporarily block signals until that little like crucial bit of code is done, and then unblock and say, okay, now I'll deal with these signals. However many have come in. So, and during that time they're being blocked, that signal can be, there can only be one pending signal of that type. So that has some small implications that may come up. But that is signals. Let's see, the kernel also maintains this actually as a bit mask, and you're going to be manipulating this with a function called sigprocmask. So there's actually a value, a bunch of bits that the operating system keeps about every process called its signal mask. Bits keep track of all this stuff. So what are your questions so far on all this signal stuff? Do notify the TAs and whatnot when you have stuff to ask.
I actually have a question.
Yes, go for it.
So for example, for the control C, like the signal int, yes. So I ran the shell and I ran the shell, and then within the shell, I ran the Python test, and I pressed Control-C, and it stopped, but it said it stopped because of the keyboard interrupt or something like that. So what's the difference between that and Control-C, like signal int?
Yeah, okay, well, so keyboard interrupt, that it is the same thing. So when you saw a keyboard interrupt, that is that came from the Python interpreter, because that check TSH thing is a Python program. The Python program's SIGINT handler prints a thing that says keyboard interrupt. I think they've just decided that keyboard interrupt was a more meaningful name than SIGINT, but it's the same thing. Let's see what else we have. Well, one more thing I want to talk about with signals is this thing of process groups. And this actually came up from some folks with questions when they were reading the comment above eval in TSH, which says, what is supposed to be an eval. And one of the things it says is creating process groups. And some people ask questions about that. They're like, wait, it says to do this, but I don't know what this is. And I said, that's right, we haven't got to that yet. But also what that means is that even though you're writing eval for your demo last week, you are not done with eval. There is more to do. You just have like a basic eval, but now you're gonna be making a more advanced eval. And one of those things you'll do is process groups. So idea here is that processes that you create, some of them, the shell will create individual processes like, process ID 32 and process ID 40 on this slide that are just single processes. But some processes will create their own children, whether it's some other shell or some program that has child processes. We actually have some examples of this, one called mySplit that is a process that calls fork. So in that case, a process that creates its own children, we want the ability to say when you hit Control-C, we want that SIGINT to go to all of the processes in that group. And so like on the left, we see these three processes, 20, 21, and 22 are all part of the same group. And so when Control-C is typed, they should all receive SIGINT, even though they have different PIDs. So they have this thing called a process group ID, PGID. And the number is corresponds to like the first process in the group. So even though there's 20, 21, and 22 as process IDs, they all have group ID 20. So they'll all receive signals as a group. There are two little system calls involved in this, get pgroup. You actually don't need that one. You need to set the process group ID, set pgid, which is what one thing you'll need to call an eval in order to get this to behave properly. There are some tests and the traces for check TSH that will check and see if you're dealing with groups properly. And there's some stuff in the text, there's a manual page and set PGID. So you'll have to use this once. In fact, I think there's some stuff in the hints of the write-up that talk about how to call set PGID. It's pretty short and simple, but without it, things don't work right. So that's process groups, another part of signals. So we have some examples of call and kill and SIGINT, all the stuff I kind of just saw. So we have some examples we can go through. I think right now you all would be like getting up and sneaking out of here, and I'd be like, but we're almost done. So I don't know if are you all running off to your next class now? How does this even work? I don't know. But I can take questions, and I hope that this has worked well for you all following along. Let us know what we can do better or not. But I think this is going to work pretty well. When you're asking a question, if you have the ability to turn on your camera, I would love to see your face, even though I know your voice, Emmanuel, but you can, if you like, I would see your face during the question. I think that would be cool if it works. But you see my face. Am I on the screen? Yeah. Kind of. Am I in the corner? Is that where I am? I'm in the middle. Okay. Well, here I am. So ask us some questions. Check in with us tomorrow during the course help hours as usual. You've got till next week to finish up Shell Lab, but there's lots of steps. So keep making progress on your built-in command. Get started on maybe the easy signal handlers. And we're going to talk more next time about race conditions and why that's one of the trickier parts of Shell Lab. And a few more things. And incidentally, signals and signal blocking is the solution to that whole problem. So we'll have some examples. Oh, there's some more stuff from Forks.c about sending signals with kill, receiving signals, installing signal handlers, etc. So there's a bunch more signal stuff. I'm just flipping through. So signal blocking, race conditions. That should wrap up our discussions of signals on our next class. We have an activity page for you dealing with signals, and that will all prepare you well for Shell Lab. And then for the end of the week, we should end up with the Chapter 10 stuff on input, output, and redirection. So I think that's our week. Once again, please let us know if you need any help, and hope you are all healthy and safe at your homes. And let us know if you're having any health difficulties or other reasons why things are not working out for you. But I think we are gonna do our best to give you a full, rich semester experience. You know, a lot of other schools have, like, you know, canceled completely or canceled all week or whatever. But we haven't done that, and I think that's what's best for you all. So, but yeah, stay in touch. Let us know how you're doing. We got a question here. What, a text question?
Yeah.
So I'll read it. So basically, I guess you all can read the chat. So basically, the parent process receives SIGINT handler, and then you forward that to the children using the foreground group. Would you handle the deletion in the first method, or when it gets reaped later? I see the question. This is a great question. Because this is not not immediately obvious how you would do this. So, yeah, David, you've clearly looked into these signal handlers. So, yeah. Okay. Let's see. Scenario. Running my spin 99 would go for 99 seconds, but somehow you don't want to wait 99 seconds. So I do SIGINT. I mean, I could do SIGT stop also, but let's say I do SIGINT. So I want that process to stop. So, if you've gotten further along in Shell Lab, then you've put you've called add job to put that thing in the jobs list. And when the process is interrupted and it's not in use anymore, it needs to not be in the jobs list anymore. So I think what you're saying is, so should SIGINT handler delete it from the jobs list? And it might be reasonable to think that it should, because you think, well, I'm interrupting the process, I'm stopping it, let's take it out of the jobs list. But no, that is not, the SIGINT handler actually should not change the jobs list. I think the second thing that you said, when it gets reaped later, where wait pit is called in SIG child handler. Yes, the second thing you said is correct. So SIG child handler is where jobs should be deleted from the jobs list. So that's a great question. And I think the kind of explanation I have for that is that, SIGINT handler really, if we really look at the definition of SIGINT, it is user type control C, but that is, as I said, sort of a request saying, please stop. A process doesn't have to stop. Just because SIGINT is delivered doesn't mean that, do you remember what happens when you say SIGINT to Bomb Lab? When you say control C to Bomb Lab, it says, ha 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 ha, you think you can stop me with control C. Whereas SIG child is actually saying the process did stop. SIGINT is, please ask the process to stop. SIG child is, it actually did stop. So SIG child is the correct place to update the jobs list. So it's a good question. For those of you listening who were like, what is he talking about? Well, you will get there when you get further into signal handlers. So keep that in mind. Anything else? Let's see. Let's do this. So now here we are. Who do we have left? I don't know. I guess we're done. We should be able to check the logs to see who came today. I think I saw a good like 30 some people though. Glad to hear CJ. I think this is going to work great. So
I have a quick question about the foreground and background commands.
Cool. You got a camera? Can I see? I mean, you don't have to, but you know, it seems like you get to see me.
So, like, just to try and test the methods for background or foreground, I went into do underscore bgfg and just put a printf there. But for some reason, I don't know if it's like you doing fork or something, but within a built-in command, whenever I call do bgfg, it prints whatever I said before, and then says command not found, and then it prints it after again. So like it's printing it twice. And I don't know why.
Well, okay, so command not found is coming from eval, right?
Yes.
Actually, so Roach, can you actually screen share again and get this slide up, simple shell eval function? Sorry. well, or you guys can look on this video here. Okay, so if built-in command is being called, that should mean that fork is not being called and exec is not being called. So we wouldn't want to see both built-in command and like whatever, were you saying FG or BG or one of those?
Yes.
Yeah, so if FG or BG is happening, then we shouldn't see a fork and exec in that case. So I would kind of say, well, what's going on? Is there an if statement in eval that is working correctly? You know, you can also, you can, well, maybe when we do, we can do a screen share and look at your code. Maybe not right now, but we can get you on with our core staff to like look at your code. But because I think I remember what you told me. But the first thing that I thought of when you said that was like, well, wait a second. If I'm seeing command not found, that means that we got up in here, but built-in command shouldn't lead to a fork and exec. Does that respond to your situation at all?
A little. I was just trying to test pretty much because within built-in command, I'm calling or I'm testing if the command is FG, pretty much the same way I did if the command was quit. And if the command was FG, then it would call do underscore BGFG.
Okay, this gives me an idea, actually. So is built-in command returning one in that case? Because the return value of built-in command is what's going to determine whether fork and eval happens.
Hmm.
So check that.
No, it's returning zero.
Yeah, so it should only return zero when it's not a built-in command. So you want to return one when do bgfg gets called. So yeah, that should be a one line fix.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks for the camera there. For some reason I didn't see it on my screen. I don't know why not. We have to figure out why mine doesn't show it, but we'll work on that.
I can fix that later.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the feedback, everybody. I'm glad it's working for you, and I really appreciate the comments, because this would be pretty boring if it was just an empty room and I never heard from y'all. So looking forward. Glad we got to know each other in person early this semester. So now I know who you are when you comment and we see your faces here. And thanks to the core staff. Couldn't do this alone, as it's not easy. So we're going to wrap this up and see you on Wednesday for sure. You all, I guess, have figured out how to do this. I guess we're not hearing from anybody who had problems connecting. So I guess they'll email us, but let us know if your friends are having problems. And what else? Help hours tomorrow. It's going to be a little different because that's going to be more one-on-one. So the way that help hours will work is that you will like connect to the meeting, but then we're going to like have a waiting room, and then we'll kind of take people, one at a time. So you can like, we can look at one-on-one with this code, and then that's done, get the next person in line, et cetera. So that's how we expect that to work. Incidentally, the help desk is working this way. Tarek, you still on here? Tarek is going to be at help desk tomorrow. And that's also going to be a Zoom thing like this. That should work pretty well. Y'all should Zoom into the help desk just to say hi to those guys, because I checked on Jonathan this morning and he looked kind of lonely. So y'all know Jonathan, right? Y'all should Zoom in and say hi to him.